Welcome to the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show. Today is Saturday, May 11th, 2013, and we are broadcasting live on Freedomizer Radio. In this episode, we discuss sensationalism in the news, everyday carry, and talk to our special guest, Jennifer Osborne. This is your host, A.D. Venture, and we're just waiting here for Wolf to join us. My co-host right now is off-site, but he's...
There we go. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, perfect. There we go.
So I'm the Wolfman. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in on this glorious summer-spring day that we're having up here in the Niagara area.
Absolutely. All of Southern Ontario is having some great great weather these days.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So we do do have an expected special guest to come on the show. She should be on just after our commercial break at 5:30. And once again, thank you everyone for tuning in. I will turn it over to A.D. Venture, who will do our introduction for the hour.
Great. Thank you so much, Wolf. All right. Well, we've got a fair bit of things to discuss today on the show. One thing I want to do is direct you to the chat here on freedomizerradio.com so that you can see a link that we're going to post right now. This is referring to our first story that we're going to discuss. I do have to apologize a bit to the listeners out there because it seems that every week here at Barefoot Bushcraft Radio, we're always bringing up a story of somebody getting lost and search and rescue having to go look for them, and they always seem to drop Les Stroud's name, who is also known as the Survivor Man. Obviously, you have other well-known people in the industry. I was about to say actors in reference to Bear Grylls, but you know, there's a bit of truth in him, and there's a lot of sensational Hollywoodism also as well. But in regards to this particular story, we have a young man who essentially, at least again in the article, seems to say that they're fed up with the way things are and they want to go off the grid. What you do have to understand is, again, this is an attempt by the media, as we discussed a little bit last week, to sensationalize and to, as they say, sexify the headline to make it a lot more attractive, and bottom line, to sell the line. Sorry, I'm just trying to get my computer to respond here so I can get to this link and get it to work for you. Now, Wolf, you had a chance to read a little bit about this story. What is your comment about it?
I did, absolutely. And basically what it says, to kind of give it in a nutshell, it's very similar to a previous story that we had talked about where somebody watches, and unfortunately, and this is not a slam at Mr. Stroud, he's a very, very great person. I look up to him in a lot of ways for what he does. But, you know, he wanted to be like Survivor Man, wanted to be like Les, and decided he was going to go out into the wilderness to try his skills. Out he goes into the wilderness, and no one's heard from him for a while.
Now, I just want to mention for our listeners here that this story was actually reported April 21st. It is a little old, but again, what we're trying to show you with this particular discussion is that if you take a look at these articles that continually pop up in the media, they always seem to have the same sort of structure to them, indicating that the person, you know, didn't advise anyone where they were going, or, you know, they just disappeared and weren't able to be found. But as always, they always have to mention that they were an avid fan of reality show host Survivor Man, you know. And again, they keep hammering that into the public, and they're basically casting a negative light on this individual, when they have no responsibility for this person's actions, really.
Yeah, no, you're completely correct. I mean, Les Stroud probably does not know who this person is, you know, any more than he knows the person who wrote the article. If this individual was, you know, well-trained in the industry, someone like myself or like yourself, not uncommon that we, you know, we cross paths from time to time. The outdoor industry and the outdoor recreation industry is actually fairly small. In Ontario, anyway, in Ontario, Canada, which is home of the Stroud, you know, the industry maybe only employs 4,000 to 5,000 people at most. And I would think that's probably, I wouldn't even see that much, including all the camp counselors and any of the other professionals who work in the industry. So small world. So it's not that uncommon to run into even people like myself or like Les, people who are, you know, even more well-known through their television work. But I think it would be completely unfair and unwise to specifically blame any of us for somebody trying out these skills. You talk to myself, you talk to AD Venture, you talk to Les Stroud, Cody Lundin, any of us who are active in the industry or well-known in the industry, we will all tell you the same thing. Try it out in your backyard first. If you want to do bow drills, you don't have to go and take a canoe trip for that. You can get the cedar from a hardware store and you can practice in your yard. You want to try to build shelters, you can do it during the day in a local park. You don't have to spend all night in them.
And you don't have to throw yourself into the wilderness either.
No, of course. And green space is green space. The only difference between being in a local city park practicing bow drill and being in the wilderness is how far you are away if something goes wrong. And, most of us have a lot of training, whether it be in the military or through schooling or just through decades of experience working in the industry, that we understand risk management and we have backup plans and we have all of these things that if something does go wrong, there's other people around. We talked on a previous episode about making sure if you are going to go out and you are going to play Survivor Man or, you know, whoever you want to characterize yourself as, go out there, but file a plan, file a trip plan. That way if something goes wrong, you're not in this position. Look at 127 hours. We talked about that as well. If that gentleman had taken a few common steps, he wouldn't have lost his arm.
Absolutely.
Do you think he'd be better?
That's absolutely correct. And what a lot of the public needs to understand, is, especially those that aren't well-versed with what we do or how we do it, and to the extent that we consider safety, the worst thing that anyone in our position as an instructor, as a caregiver, as someone who has a duty of care to others, that an injury, you know, not even to mention a death, is you know, catastrophic. And it's not something that we personally just shrug off and say, oh, well, you know, they weren't prepared. You know, it's the ultimate defeat for someone in our position to essentially have to deal with somebody that gets injured or loses their life. And it's not something that we take easily or lightly, and we take every step necessary to ensure the safety of ourselves and those around us. And it's something that that unfortunately, at least with these articles, isn't conveyed as much when it comes to the story that's represented or at least reported in the media. For example, unfortunately, due to these days that we're in, we have to put disclaimers on just about everything to warn people not to do things unless they're trained properly and such. And Les Stroud, you know, goes, you know, to that extent and makes sure that the warning is on the beginning of the show, at the beginning of his books and stuff. And unfortunately, that's just a sad statement of where we are today, that you have to warn people, in regards to using common sense. But either way, people, the industry itself has adjusted itself, you know, so that the public in general is aware, or at least, you know, should be aware, that we do take every step necessary to ensure that everyone's life is safe, including to the point if we have to cancel a whole event because, you know, one person is risking the life of many, we're going to do it no matter how mad people get.
I wholeheartedly agree on that. And again, it all goes down to risk management and also experience and time. My first ventures into the wilderness were not from watching some television show. They were from being a member of a scouting group where you had instruction. You had people telling you what to do. You had the hands-on. And I think we are slowly, people seem to think that they watch these videos, my videos included, and they can say, oh, you know what, there's nothing special. Nothing special about Les or Wolfman or Cody Lundin. Anybody can do this. And it's a profession, and it is a life experience, no different than being a doctor or a surgeon, where you don't just go pick up a scalpel and start hacking at someone when you want to do an operation. You've got to learn. You have to do your internship. You have to get out there. You know, you have to learn every piece individually. And outdoor education, to the extent of complete independent survival, is the exact same. It's something that needs to be entered into deliberately, slowly, take mentors. You know, I think the reading component of what we do is a very small aspect. watching YouTube videos, whether they be my, you know, like myself or anybody else's, are only a small component of what we do. In fact, I was actually at a camp today in Guelph, one of the organizations where I'm going to be like the camp director for the summer. And, you know, we were looking around near a water's edge, and I was like, oh, hey, look at that. That's wild carrot. And the head guy at the camp was saying, yes, but there's a bit of a problem that we've noticed. Somebody was here and thought it was wild carrot, and actually wasn't. It was its poisonous sister.
Yeah.
You know, so you have to be very, very careful. I think it's called deadly nightshade. It also might be called henbane. You know, you can't just look in a book and say, this picture kind of sort of looks like whatever that plant is. I'm going to eat it. You have to be careful with that. You have to understand. A friend of mine and a colleague, Alexis Burnett from Earth Tracks, he says, you go before you start playing with these and you look at the plant several times a month for a year. You learn its life cycles. You learn that garlic mustard looks a certain way when it's young and looks a certain way when it's older and looks a certain way as it's wilting. You learn when to eat it. And, you know, you can read a lot of this in books, but until you've got the plant between your fingers, it's going to be nearly impossible to figure out what's what.
That's quite true, and it does take some time. Now, if you want to learn more about risk management and this sort of training, feel free to contact us. Go to our website at barefootbushcraft.com and learn more about the courses and training that we do offer there. Now, what we're actually going to do is we're going to move into our next segment, which is In the News.
In Good News.
That's right, pre-recorded version of AD Venture. It's in the news. And today, we're going to be discussing everyday carry. Wolf, I know that we've been wanting to discuss this for quite some time, so why don't you kick it off for us?
Yes, thank you very much. We put this under the category of in the news because you never know the way society seems to be. Things seem to be changing and morphing in that it's not too far out of the stretch of an imagination that at any point in time, you may find yourself needing tools and equipment for whether it be rescuing someone for a first aid purpose, or you happen to be in the victim position, and that happens, and it can happen as simple as, you know, you're taking a car ride and you're driving out to some place, your car goes off the road. I can give you an example. Many years ago, there was an article that came to light where this lady she was going home from work. Totally simple. Didn't even think about it. She blew a tire. Her car flipped over and went inside a ditch, inside the culvert part of the ditch. They couldn't find her. They had no idea what had happened. They didn't know whether she was cheating on her spouse or just decided to go MIA. Who knows? This lady just basically went missing. And what had happened was the car, when it had rolled over, had jammed itself in the ditch and flooded. So she was stuck with two broken legs, cell phone and all her personal belongings underwater for 4 days until somebody noticed the skid marks on the road and investigator and found her trapped inside her own vehicle. That is a perfect example of a completely unplanned survival, literally of epic proportions, to use that term correctly. His severe survival situation. So this brings us about to something called the everyday carry, or EDC, as we know it in the industry. And basically what that is a bunch of equipment or supplies that you carry on your body at all times. And some people may say, oh, well, that's silly. Who does that? Everyone has an everyday carry. Everyone wears shoes when they leave their house. Well, almost everybody, maybe not myself. Everybody carries most people carry a wallet, purse, belt, you know, shirt, whatever. Everybody has something that they carry with them at all times. So taking that one step further to a preparedness concept isn't that far of a jump when you consider that you'd never leave the house like a chipmunk. You don't just wake up, get out of bed completely naked and wander off into the woods. You have preparations to do. You have stuff you bring with you at all times. So when you look at it from an emergency point of view, now, if you type in EDC in the internet and you go through all the pictures, 99% of the time you will find handguns and firearms. In Canada, There are very, very few people who have the luxury of being able to carry a firearm everywhere they go. I don't know many countries where concealed or displayed carry of a firearm is actually an acceptable practice. Very, very few countries. And at the same time, yourself trapped under in a culvert inside your half-flooded car, handgun's not going to help you. However,
just to add slight note here. Sorry, Wolf, I just want to add a slight note to those listeners that actually do have the constitutional right for concealed and open carry, that what we will be discussing is easily adaptable with your firearm. So don't immediately discount what we're going to be discussing as a solely Canadian thing. This is easily adaptable to worldwide situations. Go ahead, Wolf. I'm sorry.
Sure, absolutely. Yes, and you know, I'm the first to say, if I had the ability to carry a handgun on a day-to-day basis in Canada, I would be doing so. You know, other than, of course, if you're in the military or police services, where you know that is part of your duties. If I had the opportunity to be walking up, driving up the road, I certainly would do that. So make no mistake, it's by far not that I'm anti-firearm. It's just that most countries in the world, that is not a practice that's acceptable by law. So, however, you know, that being said, there's a lot of good uses to have a firearm. But anyways, as part of an everyday carry, it is supposed to be a set of tools that can help you. And in the spirit of survival equipment, nothing should have a single purpose. For example, a roll of duct tape, right? If not that I'm suggesting someone to put that in their everyday carry kit, a whole roll. But if you have duct tape, it can do more than one thing. It's not just sticky tape that patches up duct work in houses, right? It has multiple, multiple uses. There are
actually,
pens
I want to
out
quickly,
there. Yeah?
Sorry, Wolf, I want to quickly add on that in regards to duct tape. It's extremely useful, and just like Wolf said, you don't need to carry an entire roll with you. What I found that works with my everyday carry is that if you take an old, preferably not a credit card, but some sort of stiff sort of type of identification card or some other card, take your duct tape and wrap it around the actual card itself and get it nice and tight, so that essentially what's going to happen is that it's going to create a it's just going to roll around the card itself but become very flat, and you can actually stick that into your wallet or somewhere else that's still fairly flat and have access to a lot of duct tape, but in a very confined and small location space.
Yeah, that's a fantastic idea. Other ideas I've heard is you wrap it around your electric torch. You can wrap it around a water bottle. You can wrap it around pretty much anything that is a hard enough surface that is going to keep the duct tape in place.
Yep, and that works very well.
Yes, and I've also, you know, people have even said they've used duct tape for stuff like wound, you know, for putting over wounds, right?
Absolutely, blisters too.
And, I'm sorry?
Blisters as well, broken fingers. The list goes on.
Yeah, so it can be used as a splint. And that's the whole thing to your EDC kit, is to make sure that you have things like duct tape has a massive gamut. There are pens out there. There are pens by a company called Surefire and the other one by Uzi. Everybody knows what kind of Uzi. Uzi is very famous for making the small automatic weapons. They make a pen out there that the pen is designed to smash glass, and some of them, I think the new ones, have a handcuff key in them. So again, you have something that's a writing instrument that has multiple purposes. So if you're trapped in a vehicle, and of course, the sad part about today's vehicles are the more modern ones, if your vehicle, the power goes out, for example, for whatever reason, the engine shuts off, I can't get into your car to assist you. So if you're trapped and you're stuck in your car, and I come upon you in an accident, there's nothing I can do to get into that car to pull you out. It could be on fire inside. Too bad for you. So with these pens, they're designed that I can now take out this pen, whack your windshield a couple of times, and I can now get access to you to save you.
And this actually somewhat sort of splits off into everyday carry for yourself as well as your vehicle. I'll give you a quick example. In my vehicle, I actually have a small little EMT tool that can cut seat belts and has a little it's a little tool at the end of this cylinder that allows you to break open any sort of car window. And those car windows are usually tempered glass, so it's a little more difficult to break through them. So this tool will actually help crack them and then help you shatter them laterwards and get through them in case of emergency. And in regards to everyday carry, you have to consider, what do you need in your car in case of situations, that might arise, as well as what you need on yourself, on your person. Now, it's very important to actually take this, back to basics, to the very beginning. What exactly are the most important things to carry with you every day? Obviously, we have a wallet. We have a timepiece. A lot of people do carry a watch, but a lot more people these days are utilizing their phone. So something like a case for your phone, waterproof or shock-resistant, is also quite important if you're considering that. But there's also bladed implements. A knife, for example, is extremely important to have. You never know when you can use one. A tool like a multi-tool made by many different types of manufacturers have multiple different blades, little screwdrivers, pliers, all sorts of little tools built into them, and can assist you in any sort of situation. And most importantly is a light or a torch, depending on where you are in the world and how you refer to it. But you never know when you need a light. For example, if you've dropped your keys somewhere dark and you need to find them, if you need to look at a wound more closely, those essentially, in my opinion, are the three most important things: your flashlight, your bladed implement, and your multi-tool. Those are the three most important tools, in my opinion, to carry in your everyday carry. And I personally carry them on a belt that I have every day. And since I've started to utilize this sort of everyday carry system, I've used it, I would say, in its current form for the last 10 years, and it's been indispensable. There's been times where somebody's gotten a nail in their tire and had to stop by the side of the road, and, I pull over to see if I could help them, and, they ask if I can get a nail out. I just pull out my multi-tool, and boom, pull it right out. Sometimes they've got the little repair tool. We can fix it right there, and they're on their way. So since I've utilized this system, it's been absolutely indispensable, and you can't imagine the number of times that you'll be able to use it once you actually have the system put together.
Yeah, and that's the whole point of the system, is not to have something that you don't use, but something that you use on a regular basis. And again, the multi-tool, I have the Leatherman Wave, and again, there's all kinds of different ones out there. SOG makes them, and you can get like less expensive no-name brand ones made in China. Any knife is better than no knife. But anyway, I use mine on a regular basis, like AD Venture was saying, for everything, whether it be tightening up the legs on my tripod for when I'm doing film work, or to tightening up arrows when I'm teaching archery, and everything in between, opening boxes. I mean, even opening the mail. Like, it's a good multi-tool. Again, the concept of nothing should have a single use. Everything should be multifaceted and multi-use. It's an amazing tool, and there are so many options out there. It just boils down to personal choice. And make sure that you can sharpen it, right? There's a lot of different schools of thought on sharpening. But the reality is, whatever way you use, keep it sharp. The tool is useless unless it's sharp. We're fortunate that in Canada, and actually I think this is in most countries of the world, that a multi-tool is not considered a weapon. The basic school of thought is, here in Canada, is you can carry tools, you can't carry weapons, plain and simple. So it's something that, as long as it's folded up, I can take pretty much anywhere I go, and I never have any hassle from anybody with it. The police aren't going to stop you and try to confiscate it. I suppose if I was waving it about in an inappropriate manner, I would get in trouble. But I treat it strictly as a life-saving tool, exactly what it is. And it can save your life. And there's many times, where that little tiny knife can cut your way out of a seatbelt. Those pair of pliers can be used to break through a windscreen. All sorts of different times where a multi-tool can literally save your life. Or, even something really mundane. Like, I'm doing a presentation at school for my students, and if something breaks, a cable snaps, whatever, I can sometimes jerry-rig something with that multi-tool, make it all work, and it's like, wow, this thing saved my presentation or whatever. I'm a big Simpsons fan. On The Simpsons, there was an episode dedicated to the knife, and one of the characters, his name was Dr. Hibbert. He says, "Don't thank me, thank the knife." I don't think that a truer statement could be made about how useful some of this stuff is. Again, I also have part of my every day is the Uzi pen as well, and it's a useful tool, obviously for writing stuff, but also sometimes just having a semi-sharp object like the tip of the pen is useful for different things as well.
That's true.
What about yourself?
On that note, we're actually going to go on a commercial break, and we're going to see you on the other side. This is AD Venture and Wolfman on the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal, but something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most...
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. And Bellas and Burma's film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We are going to let them know that their world government has been identified, and they thought they'd explode the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead, it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
Shade the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at Shade the Motion Picture.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you'll ever hear.
Want to spread awareness to your neighbors, family, and friends about what is going on in our country today? It may be things you already know, like the large number of FEMA camps spread around this country to lock up citizens like you and me. What legislators are doing to strip states and people of their sovereign rights. Or legislation giving states the power to force vaccinate under a declared state of emergency. Do your neighbors understand what is going on? William Lewis Films offers the perfect tools to inform our population about this government's tyrannical shift from a constitutional republic to a despotic democracy. Films like 911 Ripple Effect, Beyond Treason, One Nation Under Siege, Washington You're Fired, Camp FEMA, Enemy of the State, Don't Tread on Me, Blood of Patriots, The Ron Paul Uprising, even 911 in Plain Sight, William's first production, are all available at WilliamLewisFilms.com. Get your DVDs today at WilliamLewisFilms.com. Educate against the police.
We are so pleased to announce ESP Botanicals is now sponsoring Freedomizer Radio. They have a bath and body line of products made for keeping your skin beautiful and healthy, but it's also for psoriasis, eczema, rosacea, and dermatitis treatment. They are meticulously prepared skincare products made from the best botanicals available. Committed to buying only from the growers when they can and using the highest quality cold-pressed oils, botanical organic additives the best steam-expressed essential oils, and the least processed carrier oils that are available in today's marketplace. Pamper yourself or someone special in your life. Give the gift of beautiful, glowing skin. ESPBotanicals.com. Thank you so much for supporting us at Freedomizer Radio.
Well, this is A.D. Venture and the Wolfman welcoming you back to the second half of the Barefoot Bushcraft Radio Show.
Yes, welcome back, everyone. Hope everyone is still listening. That's fantastic. So we were talking just before the break about the EDC, or Everyday Carry, and we barely scratched the surface. We had talked about three, really only three implements. We had talked about of course, the Leatherman-type tool or the multi-tool. We talked about the, carrying a bit of duct tape and, of course, the tactical pen or the Uzi.
And actually, sorry, Wolf, before we proceed, I just want to let our listeners know if they want to call in and ask any question about everyday carry or even give us some of their tips and suggestions of what they do, feel free to call in to 1-866-200-4449.
Yes, and I believe there's a non-toll-free number for if we have Canadian listeners. It's area code is 347. Let me just see what the rest of it is. 324-3704 is the full number for if for some reason the toll-free number doesn't work. Now, we are still waiting for our special guest, but maybe something has come up and she was unable to make it, but that's okay. We still have lots of stuff to talk about. Most likely we will spend the rest of the hour talking specifically about the everyday carry. I'll let you take it from here, AD Venture.
Sure. Okay, so obviously we discussed just a few of the items that you can carry, and again, it really depends on what you want to do and what your needs are. So, for example, I was discussing a flashlight earlier, and personally what I believe is best is an LED-based flashlight with a lot of lumens. They last a very long time, they're extremely bright, and they're just very durable, as opposed to, say, one of these old mag lights or something like that. They're really big and all, but they drain a lot of battery, and they use the older style bulbs, although you can find conversion kits for them. It's my personal favorite is Surefire. They've got a great assortment of different types of flashlights, and they're extremely powerful and quite affordable as well. So that's one thing that's extremely important is a flashlight. You also want to consider, as we mentioned, bladed implements, but not just a multi-tool. I believe some sort of blade, a stronger blade, is very good to have in conjunction with a multi-tool. A multi-tool does have, in fact, a saw, or many of them do. I also have the same model that Wolf has, which is the Leatherman Wave. It's got a small saw as well as a small blade, but unfortunately they're not very, I guess, strong, at least made for very heavy-duty type work. And for that type of thing, I actually have a folding knife, but you may want to have an actual fixed blade as well. But what you want to not have is one of these survival blades that they have, in quotations, the word survival, where they have a hollow handle, and you can fit a bunch of things in there, but because there's no tang all the way to the end, the tang is essentially what's underneath the handle, the full blade itself, the full piece of metal from one end to another, they're more susceptible to breaking. So you do want to have either a folding blade that's extremely strong or a nice full tang fixed blade. And what you, obviously you want to keep these – sorry, go ahead, Wolf.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and of course, before you start carrying foldables or anything, please make sure you at least hit the internet and find out what's legal to carry. Because in some areas – folding knives are a no-no. In some areas, straight knives are a no-no. In some areas, it's only folding you can carry. It just totally depends on whatever bureaucracy and political correctness is in your specific area. So please, again, don't be carrying your 12-inch K-bar, with full tang when you can only carry the little 3-inch foldable, or the very other way around. Strangely enough, here in Canada, it's the other way around. In Ontario, at least, carrying a foldable blade is considered questionable activity, but carrying my full 12-inch K-bar, as long as I'm in the woods and not brandishing it on Yonge Street in Toronto, that's okay. So it's, please check your local listings is bottom line for all this. I didn't mean to steal your thunder there, AD Venture. Go ahead.
No. That's absolutely a good point as well. And, yes, it's always good to check the laws in your area and so forth. Again, there's a fair bit of, I guess, lenience provided, you know, you don't, obviously not for a 7-inch blade, but I believe in the majority of Ontario, it's about 3.5 inches. Again, and, you know, this would be always good to check, but I think 3.5 inches of a folding blade is acceptable, not considered a weapon. And again, this is a topic for another day altogether, but, you know, a bladed implement is only considered a weapon by those that wish to do harm with it. Those that use it for their everyday carry, as we're discussing right now, are just everyday typical people. There's, you know, nothing violent or bad about an inanimate object. It's just there. It depends on how you use it. And what we're discussing in regards to the everyday carry is definitely not of a violent or of a bad nature. It's really more just to complement and assist you with your daily life. That's what it's called, an everyday carry.
For sure. And, yeah, I mean, you never know, talking about blade strength. Now, in recent times, a lot of companies are making what are called the Tanto blade, and that is a very square, blunt tip blade versus a conventional blade like a Bowie style that has like a curved tip. And you'll find that any blade has a Tanto. The blade itself is generally a thicker quality blade than a Bowie style knife. I have no idea why manufacturers choose.
Okay.
I have no idea why that is. I just notice of all of the ones that I have seen or handled. That the even with the K-bar, that the square-tipped blades, the Tanto style, has a heavier duty construction than the cheaper than a Bowie style, and then it even goes for high-end ones like K-bar, and then you know your entry-level no-name brand ones.
Now I have
and
to ask
so
you, Wolf, what's your personal
yep.
preference? Do you prefer a Tanto or do you prefer more of a traditional?
I always prefer the Tanto. That comes from having a background as a diver. As a diver, you're always taking your knife and you're always carving and chipping at stuff underwater. So if I were to have a Bowie, like a traditional style knife, it would turn into a blunt tip Tanto style, whether I liked it or not. So that's just how I've just sort of developed over the last, you know, 30 some odd years. 20 of those has been as a diver. To, you know, sort of think of, well, if I was underwater with this thing, it's going to get wrecked. So that's really the only reason.
That's really insightful, thank
but,
you.
Yeah, no problem. Now, as for, you know, blade usage, I totally agree with AD Venture on all of that, that if you're batoning wood, and batoning is basically you take the blade and you put it on the top of a round piece of wood, preferably round, doesn't really have to be, and you're going to strike it with another piece of wood and you're going to drive that blade into the grain. Correct me if I'm wrong, AD, I'm not sure if I'm explaining this 100%. So in essence, you're using it like an axe. You're splitting a small piece of wood by striking the blade and driving the blade into it, just like you would using an axe on a piece of wood. So you want to make sure that when you're doing that, you've got a formidable blade. I have split wood with my Leatherman Wave, but I would not recommend it doing a half a quart of wood with that sort of blade. You're going to wreck it.
Absolutely. And that's something else I wanted to discuss is the thickness of a blade and what your you know what your desires are to use that blade for. For example, the folding blade that I have is a Kershaw blade. Now, there's a lot of different blade manufacturers out there. I've got K-bars as well, but again, you as the consumer have to choose what best fits your needs and experience. What these blades have to offer. So I'm just mentioning this blade, you know, for example, but I'm not recommending it per se because, again, what you need is what you need, not what I need. So this particular blade, for example, has both straight edge blade as well as – sorry, Wolf, help me out. My brain's My brain's blanking out here while I'm...
Serrated?
Thank you, serrated. Yeah, I should mention to our audience that I'm also managing the soundboard and our connection here, so I do apologize for being a little distracted, but yes, the serrated blade. And in regards to that, the reason why I have both is that I found such utility with having both available to me, being able to cut very finely as well as being able to cut things as thick as, you know, really thick rope. And other things like that. So I find a great necessity with having both available to me and not just the one. What do you think about that, Wolf?
I totally agree. And if there's any question in the mind of our listeners, the best thing to do is take one and try it out. Try taking a piece of webbing, tie-down webbing, old backpack strap, the kind of stuff that they use, you know, the ratchet straps for cars, and try to cut through that with a straight blade. It takes forever to get through that because of that. You know, most of those are 5,000 pound or 2,000 pound nylon weave, and sawing through that with just a regular edge, no matter how sharp it is, that's challenging. As a scuba diver, exactly the same thing underwater. Things like fishing line, discarded nets, all the kind of stuff, even kelp like seaweed. Oh. But you get a serrated part of that blade, and it will rip through that. It's not pretty, which it doesn't have to be, but it will tear through it. So it's very important to have that extra little bit of bite on there. And when you go to sharpen them, you can buy special sharpening tools that specifically sharpen the serrated part of your blade. But I suppose you could probably dedicate an entire hour's episode just on sharpening. So we'll save that for another episode. But
absolutely.
Keep your blade in good check. Keep your blades in good check. Keep all your equipment in good check. Oftentimes, and I'm just as guilty as this as the next guy. You take your little LED torch that you buy and you throw it in your pocket, and you don't think about it. And then it's like you need it and you turn it on. Oh, at some point I whacked at one and the light turned on in my pocket and it's dead. So make sure you always check it. We were talking. AD Venture mentioned briefly about the Maglite one. I don't know too many people, unless you're security or police forces, that you're going to carry a 3D cell mag light, but you can get the LED bulbs, and you can take x-rays with those things. They're incredibly bright. You take something that normally is powered with two AA batteries, and you put those giant C cell and D cell batteries in that thing, it's going to be bright. They're bright like car headlights. They're beautiful.
Yeah, they're very good for having in boats or at the cottage. Extremely bright for long distances and stuff.
And I think as well for like your car, your everyday carry for you is one thing, and that's very deeply personal choice based on logistics of where you live and what kind of things you want to carry and what kind of things you're allowed to carry. And then you can get into your vehicle everyday carry. Now, the one thing I would recommend to put in your car is put in that WJQ-308 survival shovel. That is an incredible tool. I mean, as we discussed in previous episodes, I'm working on reproducing the manufacturer's video, which has been one heck of a joyride. And it's one of those things that I show the video as it's being filmed to some people, and they say, like, wow, that. But even to my mom, of all things, she's like, I wish I had one of those for my car. Like, you know, if you can have a multiple use piece of equipment, a little bit too big to, like, no one's going to carry a shovel around their neck while they're at shopping. And having it in your car, if you have a car, is a very, very good thing. Inside your car, you can also keep things like iodine. Iodine is as well, we'll touch on it briefly today, but it's something we could also dedicate a whole episode to. Iodine was used during World War II as, in the military, it was used for wound cleansing because it kills all the bad stuff, but not the good stuff. It's used if you become irradiated. Soldiers are issued iodine tablets in order to keep the radiation. The radiation adheres to the molecules of the iodine and flushes it out of your system. You can use it in a water bottle to make sure it sucks the smell out because all of the vapor, organic vapor molecules will stick to the iodine and get flushed out. So if you have like a coffee can or like a coffee bottle and it gets the stink in it from putting, you know, the milk, and the milk rots a little bit or whatever, you can pour some iodine, 4 or 5 drops, though. Bottle of iodine will say it's toxic, and if you drink the bottle, you will die. But if you have 5 drops of that in a, you know, to use to clean out a water bottle, very, very good thing to have. So you can have that in liquid form. You can have that in the pellets. Very, very good thing to keep in your car. You know, bottles of water, you know? We had, you know, there's, if you get trapped in your car, like that lady got stuck in her car under a culvert, she has water to drink now. You know, your EDC for your car is limited only by your imagination of what you could pack in the gym bag, right? And I mean, even the gym bag itself, you can get a conventional gym bag. You can get one from a thrift shop for a dollar, or you can go to an Army surplus store and get, like, a really badass version of a gym bag. It's like $200 from Condor with Molly striping and pockets and, like, all kinds of amazing things. I have some of those. They're just, they're incredible. So,
yeah,
you know,
again,
that
though,
personal choice as well.
That's true. There's also, if you're looking for a less tactical method as well, you can use one of these you can buy them anywhere, really. They fit over a seat, and they've got a bunch of pockets on the back, and you can fit just about anything in them. You know, they're made sometimes to hold CDs or a drink holder or something like that. But they just fit on the back of any sort of regular seat, and you can fill them up with just about anything that you need, and it's not as conspicuous as a bag just sitting there on your seat, which is, again, something else that you want to consider. You don't want to make your everyday carry so visible to someone that might be looking to rob your vehicle. Sometimes, you know, you may want to consider keeping this in your trunk, but you also might want to consider that if you can't access your trunk from the outside, if you've been rear-ended or if you're, you know, in a ditch or something, can you access that from inside the vehicle? So you want to take a look as to where you can position your everyday carry and your tools in your vehicle, how accessible they will be with for you, and when you need them, you know, when it's an emergency, can you access them?
For sure, because the last thing you would want is to have, you know, you spend 6 months slowly every day thinking about this, and you have the perfect kit for yourself, and then you can't get it when you need it. That would be very unfortunate. Or, again, if you get a high-end, beautiful, olive-drab tactical bag that is very visible, you know, even if you have all your windows up, you look inside there as a from the perspective of the thief, then that is going to be appealing. Like, whoa, if it looks really cool and awesome for you, you can be sure it's going to feel the same way to some guy who wants to steal it. You know, and sometimes car thieves, I mean, they don't care that, you know, it costs you $500 deposit or whatever to get your equipment serviced to get that new windshield. If they want it, they're going to bust it open and they're going to take it, right? So that's, you don't want to put yourself in that position. That would be really bad. So maybe, you know, maybe for your everyday carry, you might consider the, you know, a thrift store gym bag. The one that I carry in my Jeep as an everyday, especially in winter, we get winter where we live. I have specific supplies that are just for weather, which is probably the next thing we'll talk about. But on that is I carry it in a cheap black gym bag that I got at a garage sale. And the reason
okay,
if someone looks into my car, I'm sorry?
Sorry, just finish off there.
I just carry a cheap gym bag that is totally inconspicuous, that if I would look by it, if I'm looking in my car, I want someone else to do the same, especially someone who doesn't have good intentions.
All right. Well, it looks like Jennifer Osborne has actually joined us here, so we're going to get her connected straight to the line here. Just give me 1 second. Hi, Jennifer. Are you there? Hello? Perhaps not.
Well, Jennifer, if you're listening, I'd like to invite you to give us a ring back. For some reason, we
hello, Jennifer.
To,
are you there?
You will never defeat the New World Order. You will never defeat us.
Interesting.
We will exterminate you.
What was that?
Okay, that doesn't sound like Jennifer either. Okay, that's unfortunate.
That was very bizarre, but that's okay. It sounded like some kind of automated message going on there.
Might have been Skynet becoming active, but that's okay.
let me see here. So,
do apologize about that, listeners. We are actually waiting for Jennifer Osborne, and she was to be our special guest today. She's quite well-versed in farming and permaculture. So we're hoping to still have some time to speak to her, but nonetheless, we can always get her in at some future show. But,
sure.
Let's continue
absolutely.
On with some everyday carry discussion. So you were just finishing off, story, Wolf.
So I was going to hand it over to you.
Actually, okay, and I'll take that. I'm sorry, because it looks like we, again, have possibly Jennifer connecting, so I'm going to try to get her connected here. Hold on a second.
Of course.
Hi, Jennifer, are you there?
Hello?
Okay, that's not Jennifer, but who's that on the phone?
My name's Colton.
Oh, hey, Colton,
well,
this is AG Venture.
How you doing, Venture?
I'm always doing great when you call. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I just wanted to add a few things about the everyday carry there. I know a few people who carry who do the hiking and the outdoor stuff, same as me and you, and they have the everyday carry that they carry in the woods and the outdoors as well as in urban environments. And I personally like to carry, like to have two different, one for urban environments for when I'm on the road or I'm just out and about on the bike, stuff for that. But also stuff that would benefit me more when I'm in the outdoors instead of having a multi-tool or a knife with me at all times.
And that's absolutely great. That's a great example to our listeners about how you have to adapt an everyday carry to your needs and to your activities. So that's a great thing to hear. What else can you tell us about your everyday carry? Do you use any particular tools that you would recommend or something that you wouldn't recommend?
Yeah, for my outdoor one is obviously going to be more expansive than my urban one. For my outdoor one, I always keep the multi-tool. I always have a high grade. I'm not sure the model name, but it's a Winchester multi-tool. It's a very solid made multi-tool. Has the knife, has the two knife attachments, the saw, the file, has a hook sharpener on it, a blade sharpener. Also has scissors, which surprising have never broken on me. All my other multi-tools, the scissors have broken within one or two uses. I also have a cold steel K-bar. I think it's an SRK knife. It's a full tang steel blade with a carbon fiber handle. That knife is, I've had it for roughly 5 years now. I had it the entire time we were in Lindsay, as a matter of fact. I've never had issues with it being dull. It's a great knife for hunting, fishing, or even just cut my way through branches or whatever. But no matter where I am, or urban environment, or outdoors, I always have a first aid kit with me. That's probably the most important thing I have.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. And with your first aid kit, you're never sure. Like, a lot of people don't think of a first aid kit as something that has a lot of multi-uses. But boy, oh boy, there's so many things you can do with a first aid kit. I mean, that gauze that's in there, that roll of gauze, you could fold that in half and twist it and braid it and make cordage out of it. You know, first aid kits themselves have so many more uses other than plugging up holes that we've poked in ourselves, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of things in there. Mine has the little alcohol rub pads. I've used those to when I only have maybe a little piece of foot and I need to start a fire. That very easily helps me make a flame for that. A lot of the things in there are very easily flammable if I just have my little fire starter. There's a lot of uses for a first aid kit other than, like as you said, other than poking, fixing ourselves up when we poke holes in each other.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
Well, we do thank you for your call today, and we hope you'll call in the future. I actually know that you've got a special Facebook page dedicated to fishing and angling. Why don't you give that out for the audience?
Yeah, it's a page I started just a few months ago. It's called Fishing Ontario. It shouldn't be too hard to find. We only have 120 likes, I believe, at the moment. But if you ever want to talk, just fishing forums, send in pictures to us to post. It's me and a friend that operate it right now. We talk about issues with the Great Lakes, the levels of them, invasive species, any pressing issues. It's a good site for anyone who just wants to come in and see what's new in the world of fishing, pretty much.
Do you offer fishing tours as well?
Pardon?
Do you offer fishing tours as well? Like, if I wanted to, go out fishing for the day, do you have, like, chartered boats and stuff?
No, I'm hoping to do that one day. Just just right now we're just starting off. We're starting off on a smaller scale. Hopefully one day it'll grow into a, hopefully maybe a small company, offer tours, fishing guides, or what have you.
Well, that's great. Well, the website's always a great way to start to get, you know, to get people interested in what we. And I mean, here in Ontario, we have some. Are you in the Great Lakes area of Ontario, like around the, you know, Lake Ontario, Lake Erie?
Yes, right now I'm living right near Lake Huron, but I fished every Great Lake in Ontario, and I have to say the Great Lakes is probably one of the best places to fish in all of Ontario for the variety of species you have and the varieties of conditions and areas you can fish. I honestly don't think you can beat the Great Lakes.
Wow. What we'd like to do maybe is have you back on the show one day just to talk about fishing and fishing and survival fishing and cleaning, because my skills are a little soft in that area. But I would love to have you back someday to talk more about that.
Yeah, for sure. That'd be great. All right, well,
I'll
thanks
hand
again
over
for calling in, CT. Pardon? Pardon, I didn't catch that last
time. Thank you very much for calling in, and welcome to call back again. So, listeners,
okay.
It looks like it is about the end of our show at the moment. So I will hand it over to AD to close us off for the day, and I'd like to thank everyone for listening. I'm the Wolfman. AD Venture, you there? Oh, I guess that's the end of our show. So once again, listeners, thank you very much for listening to the Barefoot Bushcraft Show. Please tune in again next week to Freedomizer Radio. Thank you.